It's your girl Jess B.
And it's your girl Vina Nine.
And you are now locked in with us, the Anti-Socialites.
So turn up the volume and just chill out.
Because each and every week,
we're coming with that real talk.
Conversations with Miami's business owners, artists, behind-the-scenes nightclub professionals.
As well as social activists, community leaders, and aspiring artists.
Real talk from two cool chicks curating Miami's cultures, arts, and lifestyles.
Miami, baby, baby.
What's good? You are tuned into the Anti-Socialites podcast. It's your girl, Jess B.
And it's your girl, Vina Nun.
And today we have a very special guest in the building, DJ EFN.
No loud. Like,
make some noise. Make some noise.
What's up, though?
We gotta keep the tradition.
Sometimes I just wanted to be calm and quiet.
Yeah, for sure. So we're very humbled and honored to have you on the show.
Thank you for having
me. You know, we like to showcase things that are happening in Miami, the culture. We're here. We're a part of the culture, so we want to showcase it.
Right.
And you're definitely a staple in the Miami scene.
Appreciate that.
So we want to take it back to when you first got to South Florida, because we know you from LA.
Right.
I'm from Cali too, but the Bay Area.
Okay.
But I'm from Cali at heart.
She loves California.
Yeah.
But
what
was the transition like? Because I know for me, it was like a culture shock.
I came really young.
Okay.
Because my parents, they separated when I was like five in LA. My dad came out here during the cocaine cowboy days.
Oh.
So he's a Cuban ex-Vietnam veteran Marine. Who knows what he was doing?
Right.
And then they tried to work it out from when I was like five all the way through to maybe like 9 years old. So I was coming to Miami since 5 years old and going back in the middle of the night. My mom's rushing me out the crib because my dad was falling out.
Oh, wow.
And I probably stayed stable here around 9 years old.
Okay.
9, 10. I always lose. Those years are all like, because we were moving, like literally in the middle of the night, my mom would be like, wake up.
Let's go.
Okay, take your backpack, jump on a plane, wake up in LA all of a sudden.
Wow, that's
crazy. Back in another school and all that stuff. So the transition was tough when we finally stayed, because I loved LA. That was my home. You know, I had my family there. You couldn't have told me. I thought all Cubans were in LA, you know.
Had no idea what was going on in Miami.
not that I identify with being Cuban, but in the neighborhood I was from is actually where Cypress Hill's from, and they're Cuban,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the Cubans were pretty ill. I mean, they're ill all over the country. What they would do is they would create these social clubs to bring other Cubans to it. The social club would have, like, stuff for the kids, daycare. They would have dances for the teenagers, dominoes for the old people, bar. So they wanted all the Cubans to, you know, be together so they wouldn't, like, basically they didn't want them marrying Mexicans and stuff. That's what I take it as they were trying to do. They were just, you know, or network with each other. And then the different social clubs across LA or Cali would have like these dances where they would bring all of them together so they could all network and like, you know, it was pretty ill if you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
So whatever, like I said, you know, but naturally for Cubans, Miami is like the place to be.
Yeah.
You know, eventually all my family, they were in Jersey and in LA. They all eventually came to Miami.
Okay.
It's like our Mecca as a Cuban.
Right.
Yeah.
So when I got here, it was a culture shock. You know, like I said, I missed LA as a kid. I had my friends in LA. And just the environment was totally different. Aesthetically, though, Miami and LA are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
But the vibes are totally
different. The vibe was totally different.
I think LA is more chill.
Chill. Even like racially, it was different.
Right.
Yeah. Because you were at West Kendall, right? Or like, did you go to Kendall from LA?
Yeah, I've been in Kendall my whole life.
Yeah, okay. So
and just
a whole nother world.
Yeah, and like I went to Arvida Junior High in Kendall, and at that time they were busting in kids from Richmond Heights, and then you had kids from the Caribbean that were in Kendall. It was just a mix, but there was like a lot of like racial tension in the school between Latinos and Blacks, and like all this crazy stuff was going on, and that was all like new to me.
Right.
You know, because I didn't in LA. I just maybe because I was just too young, but it was all new to me.
Right. Yeah.
So that was all like shocking, and those were the years that I had to learn, and then I didn't have my pops around, so like all that was just, I kind of all bunched that up, like Miami is just like this new horrible
place. Like crazy.
Yeah.
Like crazy hood.
And I mean, that's eventually where the crazy and crazy hood come from, because I was just like losing my mind in that environment.
Wow.
Was music a safe place for you?
Very safe place, because when, you know, it sounds, maybe people wouldn't understand Kendall for that era, like in the 80s, but there was a lot of gangs too. We had like Kings, IMPs, Vogue Nation, just a lot of stuff going on. And as an adolescent, without your father, My mom's telling me, like, if you get hit, just go to the principal.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Like,
I'm gonna look like a
that ain't flying. So, you know, I'm considering even joining gangs. I remember, you know, coming from L.A., like, the gangs, you know, ran each neighborhood. And I asked, like, one of the dudes from the gangs, and I was like, oh, what part, you know, what's your territory? Like, all of Miami.
Oh,
like,
really?
God, this is a gang, you know.
This is what I need to be with.
They didn't do the neighborhood thing like that here. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, music, I got into, like, I was into, like, I was a skater in junior high.
Dope.
So I was into, like, skate rock, which is, like, thrash music, punk rock, into heavy metal, all that stuff. But in the mix, this is when hip-hop's starting to come through, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm slowly starting to get into my mixtapes that I'll make for myself. It'd be, like, Metallica and then, like, Beastie Boys or Run-DMC and then, like just all kinds, like, Aerosmith. Like, it was Guns N' Roses, a mixture of stuff. But it was when N.W.A. came out that solidified what hip-hop was for me.
Oh.
And on top of that, it was kind of like the blueprint of, like, I don't have my father here, and these dudes are kind of telling me, like, how to, like, go, you know, handle myself in the streets. But I had the balance of my mother as well.
Right.
So it's like I wasn't going to go and kill a cop or anything, you know what I'm saying, wild out like that. But it was, like, that perfect balance for me, like, needing that male influence.
Yeah.
And hip-hop kind of provided that for me, and it kind of, like, helped me through those turbulent years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So in high school, is that when you were like, I'm going to be a DJ, and I'm going to start putting out these mixtapes for real?
I wanted to be a DJ, but I didn't have the money for it.
Right.
I mean, I'm looking at Eric B. I'm looking at Terminator X from Public Enemy, Dre for N.W.A., Jazzy Jeff. I mean, these are the DJs that I looked up to. Yeah, I looked up to these DJs. And to me, the DJ was really, like, I was looking past the MC. I'm like, the DJ's the man, you know? He don't got to say nothing, and he's the man.
Yeah.
How are you getting the music and stuff? Like, because there's no internet back then.
No internet, so it's pirate radio, public access radio, college radio, WVUM out here. And then I forget what days of the week or what day, even a week of the month, new hip-hop tapes would come to the stores.
Okay.
And didn't have much money to buy them all, but if we didn't have enough money, me and my friends would go steal them. We'd go in there and we'd, like, cause a ruckus, start a fight on this side of the store, and we'd be throwing all the tapes in there, taking out the sensors.
Bad man, doing bad man things.
Hey, well, whatever to get my fix.
You gotta do what you gotta do, man.
And, you know, luckily back then there was only a handful of new artists coming out at a time.
Nothing like that. Speaking of artists, like, what artists were you trying to focus on? Because we heard that you were really into, like, the Miami and repping Miami. You know, all these New York mixtape DJs was, like, repping, you know, Brooklyn, the Bronx.
But, yeah,
like,
I hear that shit.
What artists in here at that time when you first started really repping Miami were popping?
What artists?
Yeah, what artists were you trying to feature?
Mother Superior, who had the song Rock Bottom. There's these dudes called Those Funky Bastards. Last Straws, who were from the Kendall area. Who else? Do you remember?
Black Forest,
who were from Broward, though. There was a B-Dope as well. There was a lot of artists in Miami at the time.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, though.
Nobody talks about them.
Well, we did back then.
Yeah.
Because the hip-hop scene back then in Miami was minute, it was small. Like, right. You literally knew, if you didn't know someone by name, you knew them by face.
Gotcha. Mm.
It was maybe a couple thousand hip-hop heads. You know, I always equate being a hip-hop head in that era to, like, the goth kids in school. You knew who they were.
Oh, right. God. Okay.
The problem was is that they, in Miami at that era, they would call them New Yorkers. Because everybody from Miami thought that was a New York phenomenon. But, you know, that's the part that would bug us, you know, and bug people like me, my boy here, who's original Crazy Hoodie's from Jersey, I'm from L.A.,
right.
A couple of others weren't from Miami, or the guys from Miami, we're like, this is not, we're not New Yorkers.
We just love hip-hop.
You know, and yeah, and that bothered us, and we wanted to make a name for Miami hip-hop, not to be associated automatically with New York. And that was a struggle for early Miami, because you had, like, the bass scene, you had cats just like all the way Miami, not understanding what this, they just, hip-hop equals New York.
Right.
And New York, the radio here didn't say, like, once, we didn't have hip-hop on commercial radio in that time. So once hip-hop was on commercial radio, they started using the tagline, where hip-hop lives, and that's what started to change the identity of what hip-hop meant to everybody else in Miami.
Oh, okay.
Which kind of sucks, because they listen to the radio before they listen to their own, you know, people in their own city telling them, we're Miami.
I mean, I don't know if times have changed or been any better. Like,
They've changed.
I'm saying, like, the actual, like, supporting the Miami artists.
Oh, no, that's never changed.
Yeah.
But we're not the only city that has that problem. Yeah, I've traveled, and a lot of cities have that problem.
Living in Miami, Miami people or Miami artists make it seem like they're the worst at it, though. Like, you never play, like, the mainstream or commercial music, they never play that music. Like, they never play Miami artists. Like,
right.
I know you're aware of Denzel Curry, and it's like, he has a crazy fan base, crazy following, but you ask certain people, like, do you know who Denzel Curry is? And it's like, no, I don't know who he is. Like, I've never heard of him, but he's doing tours and, like, stupid crazy festivals and stuff like that. I've been here for 10 years, and it's pretty much been like that for a while, for as long as I can remember. Aside from that, there's no, like, doesn't, you think Miami has a sound?
Well, I have two opinions on what you're saying that are my personal opinions. One is that the reason Miami has that problem, like, specifically, is because we're a transient city. People aren't from Miami. Everybody's moving to Miami and then leaving Miami. Like, it's like every year, like, there's people that I meet or people I see on the blogs or on something, they're like, the new Miami promoter of the year, the new Miami DJ, and this person is not, like, they just moved from Milwaukee, and they, you know, they're popping all of a sudden, and people are, because they're in Miami, they're the Miami. So these people don't come with, they're not fans of anything Miami. They don't care about anything Miami. They just are using the city as the label, just like how, on a bigger scale, Cash Money came to Miami, and all of a sudden, they were the face of Miami.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's one of our problems, being a transient city. You're never going to have enough people at one time staying for enough of a time to invest in the city and the people in it.
I agree with that.
So
too.
The second thing is the new era that we're in of music and the way music is released, and this goes to Denzel's situation, is that music isn't consumed the way it used to be. It's, you know, you put it out online and you have so many artists, like, you can't even, you know, you wake up and there's like 10 albums, 20 albums, 30,
can't,
you know, singles,
track,
50 videos, whatever. So what's happening now is that artists are being able to pinpoint their fan base, and they can have thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of fans, and the dude right next door to this person doesn't even know who he is. And that's just because it's just the way music is consumed. It's direct to consumer, so you don't have to go through the old ways of going to make sure, you know, you go to all the DJs,
yeah,
make sure the promoters go out there and do the street team stuff, make sure you put the billboards up. You don't gotta do all that. You put your stuff out and you just keep hitting that audience, and that audience by itself is gonna grow word of mouth, but it's just like in one lane. And the people outside that lane don't even know about it, which is kind of crazy, but that's just the way it is right now.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you brought that up about Miami being transient, because I hear so many panels recently about, you know, what's going on in Miami, why isn't, you know, local being supported, or, you know, is there a Miami sound? But it's like, you know, half of us aren't even from here, and there's still Miami artists getting it. Like,
mm-hmm,
they're still getting recognition. I think there's somewhat of a limelight on the city right now. A little bit.
We go through phases.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always going to be, Miami is Miami.
Right.
Like, we're always going to have limelight, and we always have stuff that's going on, but yeah, I just don't feel like there's just not, that audience is just, it's like, I don't know, it's splintered, it's not, they're not focused enough on one thing. And also, you know, we're known as a party city, so the people that are into the party side might not really care about the cultural, artsy side of the, like, following a certain artist or a certain movement. You might go to the club and see people in the club every day, every week, and they might not know about no DJ EFN or Crazy Hood or even Drink Champs. Well, I mean, maybe not now, but
yeah, you know
what I'm saying?
You gotta know about
it. You know, like, never mind that we've been around here for 20 odd years, you know, but, and I'm not mad at them. It's just, we're not in their zone. They're just, I'm Miami Club. That's all I care about. I know all the club DJs. I know who's going to the clubs. I know all the artists going to the clubs. And if you ain't in that scene, then you're not in my world.
Was that ever a conflict for you? Like, they have the Miami DJs, the Miami Beach DJs, and then you have, like, hardcore hip-hop DJs, and then you have the underground radio DJs, and then you have the strip club DJs. Like, that's how Miami's, like, is, like, sectioned up.
Divided a little bit.
I mean, I don't have a problem. It is divided by that, but I don't have a problem because I was one of those at one time.
You could,
all of that.
I was the club.
I started out as a club DJ. I mean, I did mixtapes first, but I was a club DJ. I did one of the first... We did Crazy Hood, did one of the first hip-hop clubs on Miami Beach. Like, I had to sit there and convince the owners of Zen for
Zen?
2 or 3 months to do hip-hop. Like,
where was Zen at?
It's, now there's a Starbucks there, I believe.
Wow.
12th
and Washington.
Washington?
Yeah, Zen, it ended up being, I forget what the name of it afterwards was. SoBe Live. It ended up being SoBe Live.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So we did the first hip hop party there. We brought Nori for his first show in Miami in '97, and this is gonna sound crazy, but I had to. The only club that would actually let me do it, and it still took me some convincing, was a club that was a strictly gay club. Now, mind you, our night wasn't a gay night,
yeah, right?
But I had to go in there on drag night to get to the manager to like work out the paperwork. You know what I'm saying? And that's how difficult it was to do, you know, part. Wow. But I was a club DJ. I mean, I didn't DJ in the strip clubs, but I was in the strip clubs a lot.
I'm not gonna talk about that.
It's a part of Miami.
I was gonna say it's like a big part of Miami.
It's life. It's so funny because, you know, I'm a female and I'm from up north, but like, right, it's a regular thing for me to do as happy hour, you know, to get off of work and be like, yo, we're going to the office. Or
I try to tell my girl that, but she's from LA and she's not having it. She does not understand.
I've been to strip clubs in LA culture, and I wouldn't understand it either.
Strip clubs aren't big on the West Coast like that. They close down early. Like, there's no like music breaking or record breaking. It's just
like you can really go there. I eat food in the strip club and have a conversation.
My boys do that, but I can't eat food. Titties in my face.
You don't know what you're missing, man. The wings are always the best.
I want to savor my food. And I want to savor the titties. Like, I don't
want to
put them together.
Listen, yeah, that's hilarious.
Titties and wings, man. Titties and wings.
So
I'm trying to sell food.
Yeah, you really went hard back with the street promotion.
Right.
You had your own marketing and promotion company and all that crazy hood. How did you develop that concept, and how involved were you actually like in the streets? Because like we hear of, like Freestyle Steve was telling us about how he was really like out there, Chef Big T.
We didn't have internet, so we had to be out there.
Yeah, so like, give us a synopsis or a picture of like how you started, and then when all those record labels and big brands started coming to you.
Right. Well, again, you know I'm from Kendall.
Right.
Miami's not known for Kendall. Let's start there. No. So when we were telling, first when I told, and then most of my friends, not most, half of my friends were like, you trying to do like music from Kendall, hip hop, like
good luck with
crazy.
That.
It was a handful of good friends that were like, let's do it.
Okay.
We had no blueprint, we had no idea what we were gonna do or how we were gonna do it. So once we started to, you know, once the brand was established, once the mixtape started coming out, the only thing that could be done is just go out there and smash the streets. Like, let them know we're here. And my philosophy always was, they don't have to like you, they just have to know about you.
Right.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, I just want someone to come to this city and just be like if they ask them about, I've heard of them. Even if they don't like me, of course I've heard of them. Motherfuckers got, they're all over the place, you know?
Right.
So, you know, you have to go to the flea markets, you had to go everywhere. Like, we just had to smash Miami. So we did that as a brand, as Crazy Hood. We would sell shirts out the back of our trunks. You bought a shirt, you got a mixtape, you know, whatever it took. We would do posters and stickers, and I used to even do fax campaigns where I would have all these cards from all the conventions of all these labels, and I would just mass fax these guys. So
really?
I just wanted
fax
their fax
machine
to look crazy.
Wow.
Saying who's crazy, EFN, Crazy Hood.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was like my little secret, like nobody knew. I'm like, yeah, I'm mass faxing these dudes.
That right there.
It's like mass email.
Yeah,
that was crazy.
Genius.
So
right.
People would tell me like, yo, EFN, like in my office, all of a sudden the fax machine started going crazy and it says Crazy Hood, EFN.
And it looks crazy.
So what happened was a couple friends of mine but I was a DJ that had to be serviced by the other promoters, and some of them were friends of ours. And it was my idea I told one of them, if you need any help promoting, we already in the streets, you know, just give us stuff and we'll be more than happy. Back then, just to have stickers and fucking shit from the label, you were just geeked off of that shit.
Okay.
So I was just like, and then my boy was like, well, you do so good, you do such a good job with yourself and even helping me, why don't I throw you some bread? And
you
helped me officially. So we were like, cool. And then it got to a point where my boy was like, I'm going to move. I'm going to give you my account. And it was Priority Records. And then it just started to snowball. You know, the word started getting out. Who's that team smashing out there? And then we almost had every record label. We had Def Jam, Rockefeller, Universal, Capitol Records. We even had Coca-Cola, Echo Clothing, Cardi. Like, we've had it all at one point. And we still do it, and I turned it into a consulting firm as well. We consult people on how to do guerrilla marketing. Mm. We've even done politics in the past.
Do you think guerrilla marketing is dead, or
no.
Do you think? But
not at all.
The internet has. I feel like the new generation feels like the internet is where it's at. Like, they don't have to step in the streets anymore. They don't need to, you know, speak to people. They don't need to
hear
word of mouth.
For people who know guerrilla marketing, because if, as long as they forget about physical, then when you do something physical combined with internet, they're going to be like, oh, what the fuck is that? You know, like it's something old, but it's new to them.
Yeah.
So if I do a crazy internet campaign at the same time, all of a sudden you walk into to a club and on the, you see poster boards all of a sudden, or stickers, or someone with picket signs, or like we might not do it as much because that's really throwing away your money at this point.
Right.
But if you do it strategically, you know, and you do it for special events and occasions, you're going to make a big impact because people ain't doing it no more.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
That's why I think it's still important. And, you know, especially if you're on the come up and you don't know what else to do, you might as well go and hit the streets.
I know you were doing Street Team for Slip and Slide Records,
yep,
as well.
And, yeah.
And then I know you also were involved with like the Record Pool.
I just had my own record.
That huge record.
I actually I worked at Slip and Slide too, and one as an intern, like, and this is like 2008, 2009. They started with the. They had me doing Record Pool as an intern, but it was like dying. It was slowly dying out.
Right.
So I was like, do you think there's a need for that right now? Mm. Or
Record Pool?
Not even like through internet or just download and.
Look, mixtape's dead. Record Pool's dead. Even record servicing is kind of dead. Because now everything is out there for you to get when you want it. You can find it, you know, as long as you're internet savvy, you're going to get whatever record you want. As far as mixtapes go, I told people blogs became the new mixtapes.
Mm.
You know, you went to a mixtape DJ to get the hottest new shit or a freestyle or something very exclusive you couldn't find anywhere else. Go to your favorite blog, you know, something exclusive or a freestyle or the newest shit right there. And they are catering it to their audience. So it's like a mixtape DJ, you know, doing something specific on how he does it. Each blog does it the way they do it. Artists that they kind of want to put out. So yeah, I don't think pools of that, like record pools.
Do you think it waters down like the culture a little bit? That it
to what?
To the point where like you don't have people or powers that you can like go to. Like there's no regulation, I guess. That like before you had to go through a source to get
right.
it, and now like any and everybody can do it, and that's probably why so much
yeah,
of it.
It's good and bad.
Right.
It's good because there's nobody controlling because. The bad side of that is that people abuse that control, the gatekeeper, so to say.
Gotcha.
You know, the bad side is that everybody can do it. You know, anybody with a fucking iPhone now can record themselves and put it on SoundCloud immediately, and it's just more trash that we got to get through to get through
to
good
the good
music.
Stuff, yeah.
Now, potentially, you would think that if something gets through that trash, that's going to be amazing music, but that wouldn't be the case all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, yeah, there's pros and cons to both
right.
of it. Because it did suck before to have those gatekeepers. And, you know, and that was the problem with New York and why, in a sense, New York kind of lost its grip on hip-hop industry. Because they were trying to be those gatekeepers. And they kind of looked down
tight.
On everybody else. And they were like, you ain't, you know, you don't sound like us. You ain't like us. And then the rest of the country rebelled against that. Like,
right.
we don't want to be like, we're not going to let you just,
right.
you know, hold it down like that. So that's the problem with that side of it. Then the other side is just too much.
Dope. You also transitioned into the retail industry. You had your own store, Crazy
right.
Goods.
We need more like that.
Tell us about the motivation behind doing that. Because to me, that's a risk. Because you, like you said, you're in West Kendall,
mm-hmm.
Not known as Miami, a hip hop staple. So, what was the workload like, and the inspiration behind opening up that store?
It was all trying to fill a void. Really not into retail. It wasn't my thing at all. It wasn't my intention. My homeboy, Eddie Giggs, who partnered up with me to do it, we came up with an idea. We don't have, you know, it was hard. There was maybe like three or four stores like that in Miami. And there was one in close to Kendall called Backway. And most of these stores were kind of like borderline head shops, you know, for weed and stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. You know, for like, I wanted to create a pure hip hop environment where you came and got everything you needed in terms of hip hop. You got gear, graffiti paraphernalia, mixtapes, vinyl, all that stuff.
All the elements.
And I wanted it to be in a sense. I wanted to give a good name to hip hop. You know, where if a parent came with their kid, they don't have to see a bong there.
Right.
You know.
True.
Not to say that we're perfect role models, but that was a goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we created this store and called Crazy Goods. And but the thing is that we don't come from a retail background. Our motivation was not to become clothing retailers, and that's a whole other world.
Yeah.
When we got into it, we did not know what we were getting into. You have to have credits. You have to Like, if you don't have a credit line with these companies, they send you, basically you pay and they send you whatever they want to send you.
Oh.
Like packs. And it's usually stuff that they haven't been selling. So we would have like size 51 of like the new Pure Player jeans. And we were like, who the hell is going to fit into this? You know, like, I mean.
Somebody needed them.
We had some good stuff, but. And then what happened to us with the store. And like I said, so that wasn't the motivation. It was just to have a place for people
it
to come.
Love.
And yeah, and just for the community. And we would do jams for the community, like B-boy jams, freestyle battles, stuff like that. But then we started, the police started bothering us.
Oh.
Because they were looking at these young black and Hispanic guys running the store. And what's up with that? And then they're looking for like drug stuff and they don't find it. So we would start getting raided by the cops.
Damn. Wow.
Yeah, and they raided us a couple times.
What year is this?
97.
Damn.
They would follow me often. I would get pulled over often. And then they started raiding us like crazy. Like they would come in, guns blazing, put us on the ground. They would shut down our jams. And then I started getting a tip off that because they couldn't find stuff, that they were going to plant stuff. And
that's crazy.
At that time, now we're reaching 2000. Now, mind you, we had like the Echo clothing and the, I don't know if Sean knows that. We had a Biggie's brand. It was Brooklyn Mint. Fuji had a brand. We had like all these different brands. And then at that time is when, back then it was Burdine's, now it's Macy's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They department stores now started to carry these lines of clothes. And then their margins were way better, so it's cheaper because they're buying in bulk. So now there became no need for a store like ours. So it kind of happened perfectly, like where it's like, okay, exit stage left before we get into some problems. And we closed down after 3 years because of those issues and because of the market changing.
Yeah, it still was good to have and people know about it.
No, we loved it. We used to have artists come to our store and do signings. And, you know, to come all the way down that far south, you know, people were just, you know, ecstatic about it.
Yeah, because like we said, it's another world. Like,
it's totally another world.
Yeah,
I get lost going to it every single time I get on 826.
Yeah, like what I told you, I'm coming from Kendall.
Yeah.
I guess it'll take me a minute.
Oh, yeah, right. That's why I knew. I was like, don't worry about it.
We're here. We're chilling.
So you ended up producing Nori's Noriality. Is that how your relationship started? Or did y'all start out as friends or was it business first?
He came. He was on his promo tour for the Capone Noriega album, the first one, War mm-hmm. Report. And my boy, Phil the Mayor, who's that live?
Shout out to Phil.
Yep.
Atlanta.
Phil, if I'm not wrong, it's Phil that brought him, right?
Phil.
Yeah, pretty sure Phil brought him. So Phil.
To the store.
Yeah, because back then, no internet. You have to do the tour with the artist to all these retail stores so to get the word out. And he brought Nori to my store, and I had just got this beautiful 4-track to get freestyles from my mixtapes. I think he was one of the first artists to jump on it. I was like, hey, he came. And Matt Cool, I was giving him the mic. I'm like, I need to freestyle from you. And this is, you know, Nori was really, you know, about to hit his peak right then. And he did some freestyles, and, you know, he had that Puerto Rican side to him. So he really, like, you know, identified with the Latinos and stuff, the side of us. And we just hit it off. We just hit it off. And when he left, we kept in contact. And, you know, we definitely were, like, trying to represent him down here, promote him, you know, just whatever we could do. And he was always like an advocate for us. Like I would hear that he'd be on 97 and he'd shout us out over there. And then I worked it to get him for his first show after the NRE album came out, his first solo show in Miami, which is that club I told you. That club was called Warsaw. And we brought him down for that first show. And then that worked out really well. And then after that, Capone got out shortly after that. And they entrusted me to book the show for Capone's coming home in Miami. It was during some kind of conference out here. Impact? Yeah, and it was called the Jump Off Capone Home, and they entrusted me to book everything, and I did everything for them. And then from then on, you know, it was just solidified. You know, I was basically their guy in Miami, and, you know, they represented me up there, and we've been friends ever since. And then he moved down to Miami, and he actually moved to Kendall at one point.
Oh, wow.
And he was working out of my studio in Kendall, and we did a radio show, a Sirius XM radio show, that is the beginning that it evolved into what is Drink Champs today.
Yeah. That's crazy.
You guys meshed your company names pretty well.
Like, Military and Crazy Raw, that was his idea.
I was like, what?
That would not have been my idea. It was definitely his idea.
I was like, this has to be a mesh.
Yeah, it was a tongue twister. Military and Crazy Raw Radio.
That was
it was Military is his, Crazy is us, and then Raw was the station. We're on 66 Raw on XM.
We got everybody in there.
Everybody.
But you just spoke of conferences or a conference, and we're aware that that's where you used to really get all your drops.
Yeah.
You just used to like really like go in like
hustle
on some gorilla, I mean, like really gorilla.
That was really like one of the main factors in being able to get things, being from where we're from. I was like, how are we going to meet these people? We need to go to them.
Right.
And luckily we had How Can I Be Down in Miami, which is very convenient.
Yeah, was that Peter Thomas?
Peter Thomas. Phil was a part of that. He was helping them out. And we went to two or three of them, at least.
One in Jamaica.
And I would get all my drops there, and I met artists. And this is a different time period in hip-hop. These artists were just happy to be out of New York or wherever they were from. Happy to be in Miami and happy to be recognized, because a lot of them weren't even recognized yet, you know?
Really?
Yeah, like I'm talking about like a humble Busta Rhymes and a humble Biggie, right. Humble Big Pun.
Try to find that now.
It's a different era. Yeah. Thank God that I would live that era.
Yeah.
But you weren't scared and you took a chance.
Well, I had 20 crazy hoods with me. I'm definitely not going to be scared with 20 crazy hoods, and we're all aggressive and we're all, you know, we all know the goal. And at the same time, when I say aggressive, meaning we knew what we wanted.
Right. Yeah.
We definitely weren't going to disrespect anybody that wasn't going to disrespect us.
For sure.
But if you disrespected us, then, you know, we were young and just as like anybody else.
We got that life.
We would do it.
You touched on saying that you guys had a goal. Like, that was what made you guys have this. There was no blueprint, but you knew what you needed to get. So it was like, it was no hesitation to be confident and go out there and, like, meet these people.
No, not at all. But
that's dope.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm lucky because I had such good friends around me. Without my friends, like, I wouldn't be doing this, because it was just like our brotherhood is what we all love the music together. We did the music together, you know, we enjoyed it together. And they would go out and tell a dude, I'm DJ EFN, give me a drop. You know, like they would go out there and get the drops like if they were me. And we all had a role and we all did this together. And that's what created the movement and what propelled us, you know. And a lot of people didn't have that support system. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think set us apart as well.
That's cool.
So you're still putting out music. You had the album, The Another Time. Mm-hmm. It was all original, so it wasn't like a mixtape or anything.
No.
I saw some of the artists that were on there. You really, like, had a eclectic mixture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you have personal relationships with all of them, like Bun B, Redman, you mentioned Denzel.
Yeah.
So what was it like working with those artists to put this project together?
No, that was a dream project. It was something that I always wanted to do as a mixtape DJ.
Okay.
To do an all original album. Obviously, DJs were doing that. I've been doing it for a minute, but I didn't have the resources to do it. I wanted to do it right. Like, I didn't want to do it half-assed. So I waited and I waited. And finally, there was a moment where I was like, I'm not going to wait no more. I'm just going to do it. And I was fortunate enough because at the time I was doing mixtapes, and I did pirate radio and college radio as well.
Right.
The labels, the artists, the managers, they needed me. So they would cater to me.
Nice.
Fast forward, and now I'm doing this album. As a DJ, they don't need me anymore. So to ask for favors or ask for them to do something was a tall task, because they don't need me to play their record. I'm not in a club like that. I'm not on the radio. I'm not in mixtapes. None of that. I'm just DJ EFN that you remember. You know, I mean, I'm doing what I do, other things, but it doesn't impact their careers.
Right.
So I was like, man, I don't know if this is going to work out, because it could easily turn into just a bunch of doors closing. People were like, sorry, just cold shoulders. But I was fortunate enough that pretty much 80% of the artists on there that I had relationships with showed out for me.
Yeah.
They did their thing. And without these guys, and that's what it goes back to. I always tell people, build real relationships.
Yeah.
You know, don't burn bridges, build relationships. And I always tell people, polite persistence. Like, you know, you don't have to get disrespected. You don't have to let people, but you don't have to disrespect people. You know, there's just a way to carry yourself with people.
Right. I was going to ask you, like, most of your relationships and most of the things that you've done have been built on relationships. So what is one of the key things that you know, a jewel that you could drop and build in a relationship with an artist or an exec or those type of people?
Be consistent. Mm-hmm. Be consistent and be honest. If someone hits you up and they're like, can you do this or help me with this? Don't blow smoke in their ass. Be like, oh, yeah, I got you, son. No doubt, dog, whatever, man. I got you. And you can't do shit for them. You know, if you can't do it, you say, look, I'm gonna try. But, you know, unfortunately, I might not be able to help, but I'll do my best. Be brutally honest. although, you know, because it's hard sometimes to be honest, you know, especially when someone's calling you from a different city and they're calling your city and they might ask about something within your city, you want to feel like you're the man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you're like, I got you, whatever you need. I got this city on lock. But that's not the case for everything. You can't help everybody in every circumstance. If you're consistent with people and they see that you always try and you mean well and you try your best and you're a man of your word or a woman of your word, you know, that's to me, that's going to hold, like, that they're going to remember you more and longer than other people that are not consistent.
Right.
You know, or reliable. Be reliable.
I feel you. Yeah, that's important. Reliable.
Yeah.
So we were fortunate enough to be able to see the screening of your
film, Coming Home,
Vietnam. We both heard about it, but we hadn't seen the previous ones, the Cuba, Peru.
Mm-hmm.
I think you went to Haiti too.
Yeah. I can send those to you guys.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, we need that. Sure. But you know, we just talked about you being a DJ, being in retail, having a store,
yeah.
Having a marketing, a promotional company, and so now we in the films, like,
yeah,
like,
want to do everything,
you
media,
do everything.
That sounds big, but I just want to say something. If you want to be in the arts, you have to, like, be able to switch it up and just follow different movements. And I'm looking for a word that I can't find right now. But
it happens to me, too.
Yeah. The creative space is really hard to make a living.
Yes.
Really, really hard. And it's really easy to look like you're doing big things. But to actually make a living, you know, it's really that 1% that's the people we see, the Jay-Z's, the Beyoncé's, and all these people. Everybody else in the arts is like a struggling artist.
And they're doing it out of love.
Out of love. So, like, I would tell, like, young people, if you're going to do this, first and foremost, do it out of love and because you love the arts, because the money is hard to come by.
Mm.
But what the next thing is, when you're in the creative space, you need to be able to, and this is that word I can't find, but you need to be able to just do different
adapt?
Things. No. It's
diversify your portfolio.
There you go. Be diverse.
Okay, be diverse.
That's the
okay.
word I was looking for.
And that's right, vocabulary.
Yeah,
that's my Scrabble partner.
So yeah, you got to be diverse, and that's the thing. That's what we always try to do is, and not be diverse in a way because some people just switch up lanes altogether, just be like, oh, this is popping, so I'm gonna try and do this.
No, sure.
You got to do something that's in the same like vein of what you're doing, something that you can apply the knowledge you've learned up to that point,
mm-hmm.
just adapt it into something else, at least attempt it. And so that's what it's been like with from mixtape DJing to then going into the retail. To going into promotions, going into consulting, and then going into the film stuff and management as well. So the film was the same thing. In 2012, myself and Garcia, who's one of my artists on the label, we decided to go to Cuba just to track our roots down. Never been to Cuba.
Right.
It was just totally like, it wasn't even a film idea at first. But then I was like, if we're going to go, Garcia was already studying film, we might as well take cameras and film the experience. Just for ourselves, just for
right.
our families.
Documented.
Then another friend of mine, he was in contact with hip hop artists in Cuba. So he's like, would you like to meet them? Like, of course, that'd be amazing. So we get there, we meet them, we film it, we come back, we edit it. It takes us like a year. And then we put this thing together and we're like, all right, we'll show it to friends and family. Friends and family loved it. Some extra people were there. They loved it. They weren't even Cuban. I'm like, thinking only Cubans would like it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking only Latinos would like it. No. Then a film festival in Harlem hit me up. They wanted to show it. Then we won that film festival.
Wow.
Then another film festival in Oakland. They wanted to show it. There's no Cubans there, you know. And then they showed it, and we won that one. They loved it. Small film festival, but still, for an amateur film, we're excited. And then a friend of mine, Relationships,
King.
From MTV, he comes to me. He comes at the Harlem screening. Right when it was over, I'm like, damn, dude. He's like, I just jumped off a plane. I just got here. You hear him all like, I just got here, man. Sorry I'm late. But
he still came.
He's like, Puff starting this new network called Revolt TV. And he hadn't even seen the film. He goes, but from the sounds of what your film is, I think they'd be interested. So I gave him a copy. He takes it over there. They call me a couple weeks later. They license our first amateur film ever, gets picked up by a cable network. I had friends who've been in the film industry for years that hadn't been able to accomplish that.
That's
you know?
Crazy.
So it was amazing. And then throughout the showing of that film, people from all walks of life, all backgrounds were telling me, man, you're inspiring me to want to see my family's background, my homeland or whatever. So then I came up with that idea. It's like, why can't we do that for that audience and create that Anthony Bourdain style series for hip hop.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so.
And that's where it came up. And then we went to Peru, and then we went, and then that got picked up by Revolt. Right now they're one offs. And then we went to Haiti, and that got picked up by Revolt. Now Vietnam, it's getting picked up by Revolt. But the idea is to create a series.
What's dope about it is that I haven't seen the previous ones, but I heard you speak about it, and they all have personal connections from somebody or like. I get you said you're going to Colombia next, and that's
Colombian.
I mean, just watching it, and like I told you when afterwards, like seeing that church and seeing you see the church, it was just like that's one of my favorite parts.
I didn't
of the
expect
film.
To see that church. Like that was.
I mean, the way you was looking at those albums, you was trying though. You was like, I want
to
go here.
The reason why is because to me, it seemed that church was such a big building that it might have survived the wind.
It would have been recognizable.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to look as good as it did. Either.
No, they obviously refurbished it after the war. But the crazy part is that we were in, it's like saying we were in Miami, and a dude in the hotel in Miami said, oh, yeah, I just went to that place in Texas. Because that's how far apart the places were.
Wow.
And he's the one who gave me the actual address to the church. He had just been there not long ago.
That's
and if, without that address, we would have never been able to tell our taxi driver to take us exactly to the church.
It was meant to be.
Yeah,
for
it was crazy. That was
for sure, but it was definitely a dope experience. Like watching you experience that when you guys were over there. Like I know you got to meet some artists, like some MCs. But did you want to speak to more MCs or
yeah? I felt the trip could have been longer in Saigon.
Okay.
Saigon really is more developed. But if you know a little bit about history, Saigon is in South Vietnam. It's the part that America occupied. And it was allied that, you know, we were with during the whole war. So they are still more liberal when it comes to stuff. It's the old capital of Vietnam.
Okay.
They still kind of have, like, an issue with the communism part. So they still have, like, this, like artsy freedom that they want to express that's not like the rest of Vietnam that has more of that communist control. And when we went there, we felt like we were, like, in New York in the 80s or something.
Right.
Just even the look. It's like it looks like a big metropolitan city. And they had like an area that looked like Wynwood, and it was just crazy to me. And yeah, if we could have been there at least two more days, I know I would have found incredible artists. But I mean, it was still a very good trip.
No, it was still good.
Yeah. Did you feel the communism while you were there? Like, did you feel like you were in a communist country?
Nah, I mean, this happened in Cuba too, and I'm not taking away from what people go through under communism, but I think that we in this country have been like, not brainwashed, but it's been such a rival to our way of living, communism, that we've been told, like, communism, it's so bad. And when you get there, it's not that it's not bad. I mean, I would not prefer to live in communism.
For sure.
But it's just not as controlling, at least not now. It might have been back in the day.
Okay.
You know, at least when I went to Cuba, it wasn't as bad, but I definitely heard it was worse in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to Vietnam, it wasn't as bad. Other than that, that one guy from the Chinese
that was following
that
you guys.
That we didn't even show how crazy we were.
It didn't. It just looked like he was standing there.
Yeah, the way it started, that was towards the end. The way it started, we're all like filming stuff, and then we're looking. You know, you look at the camera, and everybody huddles up.
Yeah,
homie came like right here.
Really?
Like if he was with us, and then I was like, and the Vietnamese are with us. They weren't even flinching because I'm looking at them like, yo, is this your homie? And then my other boy, Trek, the graffiti dude, he went and bumped the dude.
Oh man,
because we were like, to us, that's invading our space.
Yeah, of course.
So then I stepped to one of the Vietnamese. I was like, "Yo, who is that?" They were like, "Chill, that's a government person. When they see things that are abnormal in the parks and we're across the Chinese embassy, that's what they do. They come and they check you out." And
did y'all have a conversation with him or
no? You could tell he looked antisocial. Yeah. He was just like, "I'm here. I'm just saying, like, I'm here."
He just stayed quiet, watching us, I guess, to make sure you know
whatever.
Didn't
do nothing crazy.
And they even told us they were surprised that they didn't follow us all the way back to the hotel, which he may have, but I didn't notice it.
Damn. So you know, when you were doing radio, I know you did radio for University of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So
and several pirate
and underground.
Yeah.
The transition to the podcast. It must have been easy for you because you're used to talking on air, or was it you were more music based?
I mean, these are far and few and far in between.
Yeah.
So I did
years.
Yeah, like decade at least. I don't know about that one, but maybe. But yeah, I didn't talk as much. Did we talk on the pirate shows? He was actually my co-host on the pirate show.
That's
we were right
dope.
Under Mix 96 and rivaling with Khaled.
Yeah.
They were right above us.
That's crazy.
Literally, we used to pull the cable.
cut him off.
No, he let the cat out the bag.
But we used to like talk shit on the balcony, like, oh, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But,
how funny
but,
is that?
I mean,
but look at you guys now.
If it was up to me, I wouldn't even talk at all. I'd just be, I'm a behind the scenes dude, but I don't know. I guess that's what the liquor's for. You know,
yeah, all, it loosens you up.
One episode you got really drunk.
Oh yeah, that's because we did the block party.
We were there for that.
Yeah, we stayed to see the episode, and you was.
Oh no! I didn't drink water. I didn't eat. I'm usually really good at drinking water. Like I'm like a balanced drinker. Like I know how to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And that day I drank beer, which is not. This is not normal. I don't usually drink beer. This is what I like. My pretend I don't really want to drink.
Okay.
So I drank beer that day like crazy. Then. It went into something else. What did we drink?
Tiger Bone champagne.
Tiger Bone with the fans.
Oh my God, that shot.
Champagne, which I think is really the killer.
Yeah. Champagne kills me, bro. It's like not okay. It makes me dizzy.
And then at the end, homie from the hood came with this thing called Molly Juice or Mally Juice, right?
Oh, man.
And it was a mixture he makes at his crib and he's branding it. God bless him, but. I took a whole bottle to the head. And
what was going on?
He was happy that day.
It was a good day.
I didn't eat. I didn't drink water.
You just searched the other day.
We call it in a cup. Like, if you're completely out of it, it's like your personality just went in that cup and it's gone. Like, EFN in a cup was there. And what happened was right when I sat at that table is when it hit me when I sat down.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's what happened.
And then my instinct when I get really, like, trashed is out of here.
Yeah.
Like, leave. And that's what I did. I was like...
Oh my God.
Which is good, really. It's my fight or flight.
That's crazy.
Blew the fuck out of there.
That's crazy. So far, what has been the most impactful interview for you guys on Drink Champs?
They're all great. I really enjoyed.
As a fan, though.
50 Cent was really fun.
That was a good one.
Because he came
He opened
ready.
Up a lot.
Yeah,
I didn't expect him to do that.
No, I didn't. He came ready for Drink Champs. And that's what I'm enjoying. Because as the podcast grew, then the artists were fans or they're paying attention at the very least. Right. And they come ready. Like, they know what to expect.
Right.
So they're not going to come if they're not going to play ball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he came, and he doesn't drink, and he drank, like, 4 shots.
Yeah, that was
he got drunk.
He got super drunk. Who says that? I was like, hey, 50.
And when do you release this?
We do it every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday.
Okay, so, well... We could talk about it because it's out there. We did Puff recently. It's not going to come out for a couple of weeks.
Right.
And that was interesting.
I'm excited to hear that one.
Yeah. Puff was crazy. Okay. He was sober. Well, not really, but he saw
it. I was Smoke Champs.
And
right. Smoke Champs.
That was crazy.
Y'all should do like a war, like Smoke Champs versus Drink Champs.
Well, Smoke Champs is in the chamber. Like, that's something that I already have all the socials, the website, all that locked down.
You're so good at these domain savings.
Yeah, I feel like it's real estate.
I heard you,
at least
I heard
I can
you
afford, at least.
Got on the Drink Champs domain way before Drink
like
Champs
5
was
years.
Even a thing.
5 years I had
a thought.
That. Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, all of that.
Who's somebody that you would want to interview in the future? Like, who are you looking forward to trying to
get? I
want
to do people outside of hip-hop as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I
want
to do comedians, actors. I want to bring... Because the way I look at it is that no matter what, I'm a DJ, Nori's an artist, legendary hip-hop artist. So whoever comes in our world, it's hip-hop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No matter what it is, we're always going to be a hip-hop show. So I would love to bring, you know, like, I don't know, some actor that you don't associate with hip-hop and just bring him into our world, have him get drunk, talk about his story, but then find out what little hip-hop story he might have.
Y'all going to go from 2 million about 10 million when y'all do that? Start bringing, you know, the outside.
I mean, some people at the screening, I was told about something crazy. That if it happens,
it's going
that guest comes, it's going to be crazy.
Nah, that's interesting. And just listening to you, I know our listeners are going to be like, damn, like he's smart as hell because, you know, a lot of people our age and younger, we think we have to go to college to get the blueprint, learn. But it seemed like you started all this with your friends and people who really
just
17,
love.
18 years old. This is what I try to tell people now because, you know, now younger cats are looking at us like the older dudes.
Right.
Everything we were doing within a 5-year period, people were always like, those young dudes are killing it. Like, those young dudes are doing so much. We went into the Source magazine, I don't know, mad early. We're like one of the first people from Miami in terms
Carlito.
Of hip hop to be
oh,
featured.
Oh, shout out to Carlito University.
They were like, look at these young, like, they look like the Spanish Wu-Tang coming in here. You know, we were doing so much at such a young age, and everybody was just commenting on the young, you're so young for what you do. But at the end of the day, look, now we're of age. So that's what I would tell young people. Like, you could, you know, yeah, relish in being in your youth, But consistency and longevity is what you're striving for.
For sure.
So, you know, hopefully you're around when you're 40 years old, still doing this and having fun and loving it and making a living out of it.
And I think another takeaway is to always continue your creativity, because you said if you're going to be in this industry, you have to think of something else to do.
And that's why you got to diversify.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a word. That's a word.
If you stay stagnant with one thing, you might get bored or beat your head against the wall because it's not working. So you just got to, you know, pivot to something else,
yeah,
and your creative juices will start to you know, change and move in your mind, because you start to think of new things and applying things to it. Like, I wake up every day, and especially, you know, Drink Champs is a phenomenon right now. Every day there's a new opportunity because of Drink Champs, and my brain is always like, okay, how can we make this work and this and add this? And, you know, some of it is a little crazy and some of it is a stressful part of it, but it all comes with the territory.
I know you manage, but do you have a manager to kind of help you?
You do it all by yourself?
I have my friends that help me, but I'm not a trusting person. I haven't really had assistants. I only had one assistant one time. It was like an ex-girlfriend of mine, and it was good until she was my girlfriend.
That didn't work out. That's never good. It's too much. I want to veer off to, like, you as a DJ in hip-hop. Like, I heard you say that, you know, a perfect balance in hip hop, old school versus new school. What would be a perfect balance of, like, a playlist or like a mixtape you would put out?
Like specific artists?
Yeah, artists. Like if,
my album.
Yeah, the like, one that was in 2015.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking about like right now, like old school. So you got like Bun B and stuff like that. I'm talking about like people that aren't here now.
You see how crazy that sounds? Because when I hear old school, I'm thinking of like Sugar Hill Gang is before me. So I'm to you, like, I'm my
shit. They're not really old school though. Like, the people he got on his album aren't old school.
That's what
at
I'm
all.
Saying. Like, I'm thinking more of like a KRS one, but
right.
You know,
which
like,
still predates us a little bit. Like, he's right before our era, but very relevant in our generation.
But you're a super hip hop head, and you was playing, you know, like
right.
So it's like, give me a little playlist outside of what you already had.
Of just those artists.
Just artists, like if you could pick,
like maybe five or six,
yeah.
I mean,
like new and old.
Right. Like loving. See, my whole thing is I bring everything, like the roots of whatever I'm, you know, where I'm from and my city. So, like, I would have like an MC8 from the West, a Souls of Mischief, and then I have like a Schoolboy Q, mm-hmm. Definitely a Kendrick Lamar.
For sure.
Actually, the whole TDE can be in that motherfucker.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, bring it back over here. Denzel would definitely be a part of that. Prez P, the homie out here, my own crew, Mayday, and then, you know, I'd have Trick Daddy for sure, which this is kind of reflecting my album a little bit, because some of these people are in my album. Definitely like a KRS-One or a Rakim, a Nas, Dave East.
I like him.
Yeah, he's dope. Joey Badass.
Yeah.
Kanye all day long.
I know Kanye. You're such a Kanye fan.
Yeah. I mean, I am and I'm not, like, I've only allowed to, I've been expressing it as of lately, but I do identify a lot with, we're fellow Geminis, so I get it.
Oh, you're a Gemini, okay.
I get Kanye's craziness.
It makes sense now.
Yeah.
So you gave me the perfect balance as top producers. Could you, top five.
You know what, I'm not so up on a lot of new producers. I mean, I know the sounds. For me, it's still like the Pete Rocks and the Premieres and all these guys, but new are people that I know, like Beats in the Hood is from our crew, SPK is from Nori's crew, Scram Jones, Static Selecta, who does a lot of stuff with Joey Badass.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't tell you that there's a lot of dope producers out there that I hear their stuff and I like their stuff. You know, whoever's producing a lot of Drake stuff is amazing. Who's that, his homie?
40.
Yeah, he's dope, man. So, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say that I would be the best one to talk about producers.
Do you think you're going to get back behind the turntables anytime soon?
I want to, and I really do.
Do you have the time?
But I just, it's the time. And the thing is, I never quite adapted to the digital DJing.
Oh, yeah.
I got sponsored by Traktor, by Native Instruments, and I've been a horrible endorser to them. Not really, because I've done some things, but... And I've used the stuff, but I've never really made the complete transition to feel comfortable enough. But now with Drink Champs and everything, everybody's, you know, we're getting calls to book me for stuff. And but my whole thing is, what I used to do is every single day I was on those turntables practicing. Every single day. So I don't feel comfortable unless I can start doing that again.
I don't know when you'll have the time to practice all day, every day. Unless you don't go to sleep.
Sleep is horrible too for me. I'm horrible sleep.
Oh man.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, you are too.
And I have running thoughts because when I go to sleep, you know, you lay down and then your brain's like, oh, that's not, remember that. And then sometimes I'll get up and oh, before I forget it, go on the computer again.
That sounds.
Hey, you don't smoke, huh?
I don't know.
That's no calming.
Man, that would help your mind race.
I tried smoking, but it took away my drive.
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah,
because
I
it could happen. You could be sitting on the couch.
I was paranoid, and then I was like, just give me nuggets and
yeah, give me something to eat. Let me go to sleep.
No, that's dope. But we really appreciate you sharing your story and like even being approachable because like, you know, Drink Champs is huge. Like we say, all you got to say is Drink Champs, and everyone's like, oh, Nori,
it's crazy.
EFN.
It's
like,
totally crazy.
And I know you're probably getting used to a little bit how people approach you because I know at Revolt, like people probably came at you from all sides and fans, you know, fellow colleagues, everything. But you seem so like approachable and nice about it, and that's kind of like refreshing.
As long as people approach with respect, you know, I try to reciprocate that to everybody.
Yeah.
Even online, if people DM me with total respect, I'll respond. You know, obviously it's hard sometimes with the way people like I feel like one thing is like people don't listen to podcasts. I'll be like, hey, can I send you my new music for the podcast?
And it's like,
you must not be listening to the podcast. We don't play music. I won't respond to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, I mean, yeah, there's no reason to act any other way.
Mm-hmm.
There just really isn't. And then sometimes when people act like that, that's why, like, I'm, again, with Kanye, like, you know what kind of crazy people approach these celebrities and these artists that eventually they just turn off to everybody because they don't know who's crazy and who's not.
Yeah.
Right.
So you got to kind of give them that slack a little bit because people do be acting crazy. I had one dude when I put out my album, another time, who hit me on DM on Facebook, on Messenger, telling me that I was a devil.
What?
I destroyed hip-hop. I'm like, my album destroyed it. that I must have sold my soul to the devil and that I made all his favorite artists sell their soul to the devil and that when he sees me, I'm dead on sight. I'm
How do you feel about trolls? You know, like...
No, I think they're the scum of the earth.
Like social media drives me crazy sometimes because the stuff that comes out of people's mouths, and then you click on that page and you want to see who this person is, and it's like they're not real people or they're like robots or they got 2 followers or they have no friends or like it's like why do you feel like you should say
I'm good
it,
at not
bro?
Paying attention to it usually. My girl, she's big into that. She's like all into social media and she'll look at like and she'll like tell you. I'm like, yo, don't tell me about it. I don't care. Sometimes she responds, I'm like, yo, don't you respond. What is wrong with you, man? She goes, I get mad.
She sounds like me.
You think I care?
Somebody came at us really crazy and I was just like, but why? Like, what did we do to you? Like, what
the
hell?
Told me my album destroyed hip hop. I'm like, my little album destroyed hip hop? Get out of here, guy. You know,
it's
like,
crazy.
It's like the thing is that for whatever you do, there's gonna be a hater out there for it. You know, for whatever you do. And then just some crazy person that has no life and they just want to attack you for whatever reason. And, you know, obviously the bigger something gets, the more haters. So that's actually like a sign of good things.
Right.
But you just got to learn enough. Back from when websites used to have the board, what is it? The
message boards.
Message boards. I used to not pay attention. Like my artists, they would go on there and people would be like scrutinizing their music. But I'd just like, who's that mama? Fuck him up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yo, man, don't even pay attention to that, man. Who cares? Just keep it moving. That's it.
Yeah, that Mayday?
No, actually, Garcia was infamous at getting mad at him. Mayday doesn't give a fuck about that shit.
I didn't think they were too into it.
Yeah. Like, Mayday's amazing. They're on tour right now, by the way.
Are you?
Tour.
Dope.
Dope.
I remember going to, like, the Rising. That was at, like, what's that place called? Blackbird?
Mm-hmm.
They used to have that back in the day.
That's
when Blackbird. I seen them. Dude Joe used to put it on.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
they got it. They just got we got our first gold plaque. They wrote the song, produced it, and are on it. It's a Fragile with Tech N9ne and Kendrick Lamar.
Wow.
And we got our first gold plaque off of that.
That's dope.
Well, you're a working man. It seems like you have a great team around you.
I do.
It's just dope to see somebody that still has this longevity in the industry that they love because your passion exudes through it. So that's dope. But towards the end of every episode, we always ask our guests to kind of like drop a jewel. In your industry, you kind of do more. You do a lot of different things, but it's always branded as Crazy Hood.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just drop something that's on your mind, it's maybe some inspiration and motivation for a creative.
That's a tall task. Drop something creative.
Just
drop
something for the creatives. Like, for the creatives
just
that...
I mean, look, I would just say if you do create a brand for yourself, make that like your everyday goal is to put that brand out there. Right. Like no matter what. Like sometimes people be like, do you have any other shirts?
No.
Crazy Hood? No. It's Crazy Hood all day forever for life. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, why not? Why wouldn't I continue to push the brand? Because what happens is people, what you do today resonates and then you keep doing it. And then someone eventually says, hey, damn, that looks kind of familiar. You know, I've had people that today are telling me that they just found a cassette tape in the back of their car, like, yo, this is you.
That's,
you know,
crazy.
And that's, to me, is it's about branding, it's consistency, it's not giving up, it's persistence. And if you truly love what you're doing, just go all out, balls to the wall, and just give it all. I mean, but you, it comes with a price. That's the reality about it.
No sleep, no sleep.
Not even just sleep, it's just
time.
Not everybody will understand that passion that you hold for something. And sometimes people get jealous in your life, family members, friends, you know.
Because they just don't understand.
Right. Very few people will understand that passion around you. But as long as you, you know, keep that goal at mind and you know what's at stake, then just, you know, keep doing that.
A lot of dead ends.
Can't give up, though.
Can't give up.
Can't give up.
Persevere. So that's amazing. Well, we thank you for coming through.
Appreciate you.
You know, we know we have a podcast. We're trying to be like y'all one day, you know, with the brand.
Nori mentioned you guys? You said,
yeah.
Remind me.
Okay, so y'all, it was the, what episode was
39?
It? 39. The Taxstone episode.
Taxstone. Okay.
And he said, who's them homegirls that got that podcast out here? And somebody in the background said the anti-socialized, but I don't know if y'all was thinking about somebody else, but he said out here, so...
And we're the only ones out here.
We're really out here, so
hey. However
goes down, like, we out here. We work.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
Every
as long as that plug went down,
yeah. And we fuck with 8ix9ine, like, from back in the day.
Nah, great,
doing
great
projects
dudes.
With them.
Yeah.
Naps.
Yeah. So Naps is on
the
radar.
I mean, he probably was thinking of y'all.
Yeah, hopefully, like,
maybe. What other homegirls are you doing podcast?
Hey, Nori.
Right, what up?
But, all right, well, thank you for coming through each and every week. The Anti-Socialized, we drop a new episode.
Right, and thanks for the drink.
Oh, yeah, Colombian White.
Colombian White, which is your...
I'm a part of this company. It's made in Miami. My two homies that are Colombian. Created, they came up with the ingredients for this, a special recipe for aguardiente, which is like the, would you say the national drink of Colombia?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
sugar-free.
Which is, this is the process
I love
before rum.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so we're coming out the gate with this.
I'm feeling really special right now, and I'm going to take
drink
my
it responsibly.
Bottle.
Yeah, drink responsibly.
For real.
Keep it on your radar. All right, well, we out. It's your girl, Jess B.
And it's your girl, Vina Nine.
And we got DJ EFN. Make some noise.